Welcome to the Lorehounds. We're your guides to yet another post-apocalyptic story. I'm your host, David. This is our check-in episode to discuss Paradise on Hulu, both season one and season two. With me today are Lorehounds co-host, Jean. Jean, how you doing?
I'm chilling, man. I'm good.
Yeah, you good? You guys survived the blizzard?
Survived, hopefully thriving, but we'll see because they said there's snow and sleet on Friday, so.
Okay, it's coming back. And yeah, I think you had some warm weather today.
Yeah.
Nicole is also here. She is the host of Nevermind the Music.
I'll say the co-host, or Mark, my co-host, will get kind of jealous.
Okay, yep, right.
Happy to
One
be
of
here.
Two hosts.
One of two hosts.
Yes.
Partner hosts. I'm doing great. I'm on spring break this week, so.
Oh, already? Damn.
Yeah, I teach college, and we're on break for our March break, and I've been catching up on a lot of stuff. I'm really eager to chat with you guys about this awesome show.
It's so weird to see you because I feel like you and I were connected at the hip during Pluribus and we just had this weekly thing and we had it going on and then it was over.
I know. We were like vibing like so hard and now it's like, where's David? We're like, we just text each other now about random pop culture things.
Youngmen branding themselves.
Turns out not a thing. I want to hop on your pit coverage. I'm loving the show and loving your coverage as well.
Okay.
So, but we have a while to go for Pluribus again, so we have to find something to talk about.
We do. Yeah. But yeah, we can get you in on that. We can get you in on some pit coverage for sure. Okay, we're going to start the podcast off with some spoiler-free discussion. So if you have not seen the show yet and you're questioning, should I get in on this show? Because I know a lot of the people in the Lorehounds community are talking about it and it's getting a lot of buzz in the media. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Jean and Nicole to each give their pitch as to what they're loving about the show and why you should be watching it. But spoiler free, then we'll take a short commercial break and then we'll come back. We'll talk briefly about season one and then we'll talk a little bit more in depth about season two. And as always, there are links in the show notes. If you've got feedback, hit us up at lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. We have a channel on the Discord to talk about Paradise. So if you're like in on the show and you want to kick some more stuff around, you can check it out there. And as always, subscribe if you are able. We really appreciate all of the support from our community. And if you're not able to make those finances work, you know, give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. That really does help the podcast a lot. Like surprisingly, it's a big deal. So let's talk real quick about the show itself. So this is a show starring Sterling K. Brown, Julianne Nicholson, and James Marsden. We're on season two right now. We're at, episode five, I believe, on an eight-episode run for season two. So we'll be wrapping up here at the end of March. This show got a ton of nominations for Emmys and other things. It hasn't won anything, but Sterling K. Brown got nominated in dozens of different award categories for his performance here. Rotten Tomatoes has got this at an 86% for critics and a 6.5 for audience. The streaming numbers are really strong for this show. We haven't got word yet about season three, but I can't see that they're not going to greenlight a season three. All the data is suggesting that it's going to go that way. So, Jean, what is your pitch? What are you loving about the show, spoiler free? So if people aren't on the show, give them the pitch why they should be in on it.
If you like Sterling K. Brown, and how could you not?
I think are all three of us
we're fans, right?
Yes.
I think the whole humanity should be fans at this point.
Yes.
So yeah, he's just great. And
Sterling K. Brown can carry my baby. I'm good with that.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
No question.
Absolutely.
No question.
He's just really good in this series. He brings a level of gravitas and emotion to almost every scene that he's in. And it's just an amazing tour de force of a performance, I think, given the subject matter. You know, it's not something that's we would think of. I don't think of Sterling K. Brown as someone who fares in sci-fi, right? I never thought about that.
Right.
But he's just, he's in it, man. And it's a joy to watch. It's a joy to see. And I just really enjoy his performance. And also there, you know, James Marsden, for he, you know, all the crap I give him as Cyclops, he's really good in this. I just think he's, they have a really cool dynamic, the two of them, when they're on screen together. So it was a real pleasure to watch them play off of each other in that first season. And just, you know, it's a twisty show. You know, you don't know who to trust. You don't know where people really stand, and they're shifting allegiances. And it's just really, really fun. It's a fun show for a heavy, you know, end of the world, but it's still a fun ride throughout. And I think people will just enjoy the ride.
Okay. Got it. Nicole.
Yes.
What are your arguments for? Yes.
I'm pro. My argument is pro. Pro.
Clearly.
Pro Sterling K. Brown.
Right.
Pro James Marsden for sure. He's great in this role. It is the perfect role for him. And they're funny together. It's not meant to be funny, but they are. And that's my pitch for the show, because my husband watched it and it was kind of on in the background. And I was like, this show's not for me. I don't like really sci-fi stuff. And it seems too serious. It seems too scary. But then season two was coming out and I was like, let me get into this. And I couldn't stop watching it because it wasn't as sci-fi as I thought. It was so rooted in the human condition and the human spirit. And I'm just very interested in that. It's got kind of like Truman Show vibes a little bit. And I'm into that too. There's a lot
of Silo vibes in there.
Yes. But it's like Silo, but not as dystopian almost.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of cool.
I was also picking up, sorry to interrupt you, like a little bit of Walking Dead and a little bit of The Last of Us, like post-apocalyptic survivor stuff.
Yeah, and it's cool because it talks about post-apocalyptic survivor stuff like Silo, like The Walking Dead, but it also, especially in season two, gets into like time and place references that like they exist in today's world and this happened. And they're talking about what happened 2 years ago. And it did happen 2 years ago for us. So it's really easy to see yourself in this position, more so for me to put myself into The Walking Dead or to Silo, because they're using like pop culture lamppost, like mile markers. And I think that's really cool. So my pitch for the show is it's not super sci-fi. It's actually kind of funny. And every episode's like a mini cliffhanger. You don't know where it's going. I'm really good at figuring stuff out. No big deal. And I,
you're a professional podcaster watching television.
And I'm a trained psychologist too.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's like
right.
The intersection is working for me
100%.
For once. And I still, as soon as I think I have it figured out, it like switches again. And I love that. And the fact that it drops once a week makes, I just ponder the show a lot more than if I were just to binge it all at once. So be watching Paradise. It's in my top 10 shows on TV this year.
Nice.
For sure.
Question for you both. Nicole, you can start off.
Okay.
I guess I should say this for folks listening if they haven't watched this. This show intentionally uses flashbacks as its story design and story construction. And so we're constantly going back from the past to the you know, to the current, to the past, to the current. A lot in ways that that Lost did a lot. But it's not Lost in the sense of making more complex mysteries. It's always illuminating about character, about how we got to a particular place in the story. So because they're using flashback a lot, Is that part of the story construction that you're enjoying? Would you advocate for that? Or is that, you know, how are you responding to flashback?
I love a flashback convention because for me, when I meet a character, I tend to build out their backstory in my head. And I love when shows and books especially do this, when they go back and tell us and like fill in the gaps for us, because I get to either affirm my point of view or disprove it. Mm. And it always like adds value to how I've developed the character and really gives a sense of their present time motivations. Because in this show, you don't really know what people's motivations are at the jump. Like you...
Totally true.
You have an assumption.
On purpose.
On purpose. And then they're like peppering it and filling in the gaps for you. And I've always been intrigued by that convention. Most of the media I consume has that type of element to it. I'm reading this great book now called Project Hail Mary that they made into a movie, and it does use a lot of flashbacks as well. And I'm realizing now, I think that's why I love it. And I think that's why I love this show. So thanks for bringing that forward for me, because I never really picked up on that connection.
And I think Alicia's going to be doing some coverage on Project Hail Mary.
Oh, cool.
I can't remember if John said he's in on it. But maybe if you're reading the book, maybe send a message to Alicia right quick.
Yeah, I'll reach out to them.
Got some, yeah, I know she's planning on something. I believe she is anyway. Or maybe awesome. I just made it up. I don't know. It's such a swirl. Life is such a swirl right now.
For sure.
Jean, use of flashback. I mean, and I wouldn't bring it up because it's not like, oh, here's a little flashback here and there to fill in some story. It is a central element of design of this show for the flashback.
Yeah, I like it. I dig it.
Mm-hmm.
I dig it. I like it. I'm not tied into particular ways of storytelling. If the story is being told in a way that's compelling, no matter how they're telling it, I'm cool with it. You know what I mean?
Right. So if it's working, it's working.
Yeah, it's working.
Right?
It's working. In this case, the flashbacks actually do work. So I get to see, you know, the motivations behind, you know, Xavier, behind, you know, Sinatra, and start to, you know, try to figure these folks out, right? Whether, like Nicole said, it comes through fruition, what I really believe, what I'm seeing on screen, whether that's validated or not, it's really cool, right? I want to see. But I'm a fan of the flashbacks. I think it brings more depth to these characters, and yeah, keep doing it.
Nice. All right, cool. Any other final little things that might have come to mind, or should we take a break? And then when we come back, we can talk about season one. Good. All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back. There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, to get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries, learn about benefits, and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve. And we're back. So this is kind of a weird formatting for us in terms of our coverage. We didn't talk about season one at all. And here we are more than halfway of season two. And so it's like, oh, how do we approach this, or how do we talk about certain things? So I figured let's just talk a little bit about season one. Let's not get too stuck in and try to break it all apart. But, you know, if there's anything key details or major plot elements or twists. There was, what episode was it that everybody was talking about? I think it was like episode 7 or something like that. From, there was the big heel turn episode in season 1 when everybody was like, oh my God, it's like a huge reveal and surprise.
No, it wasn't 7.
It wasn't 7. It was earlier than that. Was it 5?
It might have been either 4 or 5.
Right. So, yeah. So we can talk about whatever we want. But then I want to definitely move us into season 2. So just really quick, kind of a longish synopsis just to refresh us. Season 1 of Paradise follows Secret Service agent Xavier Collins as he investigates the murder of former U.S. President Cal Bradford inside Paradise, a high-tech underground bunker in Colorado that its 25,000 residents believe is humanity's last refuge after a global catastrophe. The season-long mystery begins when Bradford is found dead in his residence with a missing tablet and a cryptic 6-digit code, and suspicion falls on bunker architect Samantha, aka Sinatra Redmond, before the finale reveals the true killer as Trent, the so-called librarian, who is actually a construction manager seeking revenge and trying to stop Bradford from revealing the truth about the outside world. Over the season, Xavier learns that the surface is partly survivable and that Sinatra has been covering this up by eliminating scientists and burying their findings, while flashbacks to the day show Bradford choosing to detonate a global electromagnetic pulse over to stop nuclear missiles that have been launched between several countries, which leaves millions alive on the surface, including Xavier's wife, Terry. In the finale, Jane Driscoll turns against Sinatra. Jane Driscoll is one of the other Secret Service agents, supposedly. Turns out she's like a super secret deep mole spy person. And she shoots Sinatra and takes Xavier's and Bradford's son. Oh, yeah. And kidnaps Xavier's daughter. And then Bradford's son, the president's son, Jeremy, decrypts the stolen tablet. And they begin broadcasting proof of the survivable surface to the folks in Paradise. And then Xavier leaves the bunker in an airplane after hearing a radio transmission from his wife, setting up his search for her in season 2. Nicole, what's something from season 1 that really, you know?
I really loved the episode where they showed the day that everything broke and they had to evacuate the Capitol. And you have President Bradford, played by a young James Marsden, in it, like running around trying to be a hero. And he is, and really trying to bring everyone down to his level. And he has such a great affect, like such a great way about him that was really endearing to me in those moments. And you could see everyone else kind of just breaking down and he was trying to do the right thing. There's one great line when his like chiefs of staff are briefing him and they're using all this high level language. And he goes, guys, I was an English lit major. Like, let's keep it simple. And it just was that levity in that moment that was really endearing to me. So I'm glad they showed us that, because I feel like in a lot of shows like this, you don't see that moment, right? Mm-hmm. You just see like what happened after. Like, you don't see when it's all collapsing and how they get out and how hectic and chaotic and sad that moment was. So that was one of my favorite things from season 1. You describe Jane Driscoll as like an undercover mole. She is 100% a sociopath, 100% an ill person.
Seriously, yeah.
Like, there's no redemption for her. I'm eager to see. We haven't even seen her. Sorry. Oh, no spoilers. So, no. What's up? So, sorry.
Well, I guess we should say from here forward, We're going to spoil everything up to, have you guys both watched episode 5 or where are you both at?
Yeah.
Yes. I'm fully caught up. Yeah.
Okay. So we have the mailman, right? So we know who the mailman
is. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm halfway through the episode, but don't worry about spoiling.
Oh, gosh.
Okay.
I'm not worried. Oh, buddy.
I already kind of was spoiled. I kind of know.
Can't do it to you.
It's too good.
Yeah.
But right. That's
because I know that there's a lie. There's a lie right out in the open here.
Oh gosh, you just have to keep watching. Just keep watching. And that's like the really great thing about this show that season 1 was really, really good at, is it you couldn't even just assume how the episode was going to end. It always flipped it around on you. And that's just really enticing and really interesting. Nice. So I had a lot of questions coming out of season one into season two. They haven't all been answered yet. And when you say that there's only three episodes left, I'm like, how are they going to?
How are they going to do it? Like, right.
How are they going to land the plane here? Because there's a lot up in the air, for sure.
And that's the thing about the show is that the pacing, they have a pace to the show that is tied to the tone of the show.
Mm.
And they will not break that pace for anything. They will play out like the first episode. Well, we're not even in season two yet, but the eight episodes of season one, I kept waiting for things to like ramp up and get out of control or what have you, or things to deep. They just took their damn time all the way through. And I think that's designed because they want a certain vibe for this show.
Yeah. It's working. It's very measured and calculating. And
I'm sorry, but it's funny that you say that because I felt things were out of control from the beginning. You know, when you say you waited for things to ramp up, I was already ramped up. I'm like, in the first episode, I'm like, what's
interesting?
Wait a minute. It was Sterling K. Brown, I think, that did it.
maybe set my heart a flutter or something. I don't know. But I was ramped up. I was like, yo, what is happening here? What's going on? I was totally bored in.
And he's like running. He's running everywhere. Yeah.
Like, so I never felt like, I just didn't feel like the pacing of the story was ever like leading up to like this, you know, super fast, kinetic, energetic type of movement, right? It was always that to me because the gravity of the situation made me feel that way. Yeah. So I didn't feel like they needed to ramp. I thought the situation was, you know, level 100 already. So I was already up here. And yeah, so... And I love that about the show because even with the flashbacks, right? I think, let me just say, one of my favorite parts of season one was the flashback between Xavier and his father, right?
Right.
Everything that's going on around this show, around this time, this story, everything that's happening, and they tell that part of it to give you a sense of who Xavier is, where he's been, you know, the relationships that he's had, how, and then to know that it's going to play out in a very important way at the end of the season where he's actually, you know, piloting a plane. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not coming out of the blue. Like, this is something that I really appreciated. And just the dynamic between him and his father just really, it hit me. It hit me really, really emotionally in that moment watching those scenes. And I think for a show to do something like that, for me, it's always, you know, unexpected because I don't expect shows to, you know, necessarily hit me in the emotional spectrum in that way, right? Mm-hmm. But I really felt touched watching that moment between the two of them. And then it shows me the way that he is, why he's that way, and why he takes Cal to such, you know, why he's holding on so hard at Cal for making him leave his family, his wife behind, why he blames him to such an extent. And it's just, yeah, just really good storytelling, man.
Well, and that's what I'm saying about the pacing and the way that they unfold the story, that they went and spent all that time with, you know, with Xavier's backstory, and we get more backstory stuff in this one. And that they don't, in what could be a very quick-paced apocalypse story, like what are the events leading up to the apocalypse, and what is the secret cabal up to? That could have been a different network, a different showrunner. This could have been a really action forward thing, but it's not. It's a very character driven thing. And they take the time to approach the characters individually and not rush those backstories.
And then we also spent, go ahead, Nicole. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was just going to say that that was clear in season one. Season two, the build out of the characters becomes really, really important and really clear.
Yeah.
And right, that's, yeah. I think, the central focus of the second season as well. And they're like starting to do that deeply in the first season, but the character development in season two is quite deep and quite strong.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Now, I'm not going to make false representations here. I ground out when Paradise first came on. Did I even make, I think I made it through episode four.
Man.
And it is episode seven that is the, it's called The Day. And that's the one where everybody was like, oh my God. But yeah, I ground down around episode four. I was, the flashbacks were kind of exhausting me and I didn't really understand what the show, what was going on with the show. And I've been sticking with it. And yet, and like I have some nitpicks for the show, like the football, like I got to go off for a second. I'm sorry. The football is not a computer. The real football that the president carries is a bunch of maps and code books, a couple of radios, and that's it. It is not a electronic device as such. And that we have a global electromagnetic pulse thing. I'm just like, I'm not there. But why I'm not? Accepting it for
why,
the show.
Why can't you be there? It's, why not?
I'm just not, because the show says this is reality. This is like, oh, primary world. This is a mirror for the primary world.
Yes.
I'm having a hard time believing that the football's maps, just paper maps.
Basically.
Like that seems unbelievable to me. Like have it be a tablet. Like
the yeah, it's that crazy. Makes,
it's crazy.
Yeah, there's like
that Donald Trump's carrying around like a box of maps with him everywhere basically, he goes. That yeah. seems hard to believe.
There's basically two radios, two separate, you know, a backup and a primary, you know, secure radios. And then there's just a ton of code books and map. So, you know, they have pre-game theoried out a bunch of different, you know, war game scenarios, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you go back to Matthew Broderick and War Games and Whopper, right, you know, and then all the different scenarios and with casualty counts and expected, you know, if we do this, they'll do that. It's a bunch of chess moves. Basically, it's a giant book with all the different chess moves. If we move here first, then these guys do this. Or if they do this first, then we do that. And there's the Air Force officer is trained for all of that stuff to interpret it and explain it. And then there's the secret codes, right? The special sequence of words that he can give to the nuclear authority. And then other people are pushing buttons and they get on this special radio and they say, okay, you know, code alpha blue security clearance A12345. And then then other people press the buttons. So,
but
I'm
what
sorry,
if
I had to, I just
what
had
if
to.
That's the I, swerve? What if that's the swerve? What if that's the swerve? That is actually a tablet, but they've convinced you that it's a map.
I mean, I do feel like an encrypted PDF or something would be a lot more efficient, like than just all these maps. Well, I don't. You know. I would like it if it was like Alpha 12345, though. I think that would be pretty on brand. Right. For the code. Let's keep it simple.
Your birthday. Oh, it's my birthday.
It's my birthday. Right. You're anyway. Fine.
So I'm done.
We shouldn't
nitpicking.
Joke about it. Oh, that's,
yeah,
so
no,
depressing.
We shouldn't because things are kind of.
It's weird, like reality.
Right? Yeah, right now. So, okay. So that's my one nitpick.
Okay.
So, and I know we're not into season two yet, but there, and I was like, all right, I'll stick with it. And there's three things that keep me in on that kept me through season one. And then there's one thing that's hit me for season two that's keeping me hooked. The sort of innovative design, you know, doing the flashback thing. So I'm into that. I'm really into the theme music. I love that. You know, that is really vibing for me. And then Sterling K. Brown, right? He's just, you know, he's handsome. He has that 1,000-yard stare. He's just has a kind of, I remember when he was in, what is it? I have to look up his filmography now. It was that movie that he was in that won an Oscar a couple of years ago. American story, American Fiction. Yeah, I think it was American Fiction.
American Fiction.
Yeah, with Jeffrey Wright, and it was about a family.
Yeah.
And I think it won Cord Jefferson, who wrote it, and I believe he won the Oscar for best screenplay. No, Alicia will remind me if I'm wrong about that. Anyway, great little film. And I was just so impressed with his acting chops. So, you know, his sort of soulful character and, yeah, and I guess just all the way that they're doing the character development is what is keeping me engaged in the show. So, Nicole, anything else for season one that you wanted to touch on?
No, I'm really curious to revisit some of the characters in season one that we haven't yet seen in season two and like what's up, what's happening with them. We'll get to season two in a minute, but we haven't spent a lot of time in the bunker.
No, we haven't.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, where's the sun?
Some. Yeah.
Like, you know, where are all these people? Like what's going on there?
Right.
Was it season one or season two where we see, no, I think it's season two where we see some of what's going on in the bunk or where
we
people
see some
are being
flashbacks.
Taken.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We at the end of season one, we see him taken to the son, taken to the prison of the bunker where the bunker architect is also.
Was that season one?
Yeah. I think that was the end of season one.
Okay. Got it.
I think. And it's deep, deep down.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which has given me like big Silo vibes. You know? Like, there's like secrets in within secrets here.
Well, that's what's really interesting is that like the bunker is very 1950s Americana. And that's something I'm really interested in, like the social ethics of the design of the community in this universe. And I want to talk about that when we talk about my three things that I love in season two.
Got it. All right. Well, let's jump on there unless you got anything else, Sheldon, that you want to hit on.
No, let's go. Real quick. Season two.
And we're back. Okay. So let's start talking about season two. But obviously, season one is open, you know, because we can't talk about season two without talking about season one. So, a quick synopsis of the story so far. The story continues to alternate between Xavier's mission on the surface and then growing instability inside the bunker. 3 years after the day, Xavier leaves Paradise in a plane to search for his wife, Terry. He survives a crash, and then he teams up with Annie, a former medical student and Graceland tour guide who's been surviving topside. By episode 5, he reaches the community where Terry lived and meets Gary, a former mailman who shared a home with her for 3 years. Gary, secretly obsessed with Terry, killed his friend Ennis to stop Terry from leaving for Colorado and then sets a trap for Xavier, saying that she was taken. Meanwhile, inside Paradise, Samantha, aka Sinatra, has awakened and re-entered the political struggle. President Harry Baines tries to hold power as Jeremy Bradford leads an organized rebellion and a band of surface mercenaries led by Link moves towards the bunker, apparently to kill someone named Alex and possibly seize the facility. Flashbacks and revelations show that Sinatra was diverting resources to a larger secret project beyond the bunker, hiding evidence that the outside was becoming habitable. And while episode 4 delivers a major blow with Annie's death shortly after giving birth to her and Link's baby, and we are episode 5 of 8, and we're scheduled to wrap up at the end of the month. Nicole, do you want to lead us off with your season 2? Do we call them hot takes? What are these? Just your takes.
I have so many takes.
Go for it.
I'm going to try to keep it concise. Yes. Great. Yes. Okay. So
yes, all of it.
It's all happening at once. It's like flooding into my forebrain all at once. I'm loving how we're seeing some external locations outside of the bunker and how they're all quite different. I love the Graceland piece. I think it's so funny that she's like walking around in Elvis's slippers, you know, and like wearing Priscilla's outfits. It's just so bizarre and kind of lovely and nostalgic to me. in that first episode, we're introduced to Link. And 2 minutes into seeing him on screen, I screamed because I said, maybe you guys don't know, but I was like, that's Harry Hook. Do you know who Harry Hook is?
I do not know who
Harry Hook is. Oh my gosh. And you have daughters. I don't understand. So there was this
daughter.
Okay, very good. There's this movie called The Descendants. It's like a kid's movie. Uh-huh. And there's a great character, Harry Hook. He's Captain Hook's son. And I really got through COVID watching Descendants with my kid, having such a crush on Harry Hook. So much that I like followed him on Instagram. I'm a huge Thomas Doherty fan. So when he came on the screen
as this character. Oh, is this the movie about the kids of the fantasy characters? The kids of the
villains, yes. Yeah, and he like was Captain Hook's kid and just carried a hook with him all the time. That was so funny.
Okay, cool.
And he like was cute and he wore eyeliner and I'm into it. So it really hit a lot of great notes for me in this like Venn diagram of my interests of Harry Hook and also Zelda and also post-apocalyptic survival stories. Like those are my three main areas of interest. Mm-hmm. So the introduction of this character really ignited me towards this story. And hearing him and his band's backstory reminded me of the time and place that this is happening in a way that season two continues to do. That we're not in the future apocalypse. Like, we're not way back in the past. We're right here and now with like modern day. Yeah. And yeah. I think that that was refreshing. Mm-hmm. And really relatable. So that's one thing I love about season two, that we're grounded in very current time and place. And we're reminded of that a lot. Right. And I just love the introduction of this Link character as calling him a protagonist. He's a leader of a lot of people and he's very young and he's got a lot of charisma. And I'm really interested to see where this story goes. I loved like the Love Actually moment with him in front of the camera, like holding the cue cards to like give them the message.
Right, yeah.
So, right, yeah. And he like references that as a Love Actually moment. And it's just another like cultural touch point that they're embedding here that I think is really cool.
So really quick on that note about time and place. A lot of apocalypse stories are either distant past, alternate universe, distant future, but rarely do we get them lined up with us right now. So that's a really interesting observation. I hadn't really thought about that as such. I mean, we get, I guess, Walking Dead and The Last of Us are contemporaneous, but they are such... The world has shifted so much because of the zombie aspect of it. It's like, it doesn't feel like real. Where here, there's only sort of an environment, a diffuse environmental threat. There's not a zombie threat or some other sort of creature thing. So the world is still the world in a way.
And there's such a juxtaposition between those like very 2020 up cultural references and the architecture of what's in the bunker and how it does feel very nostalgic. Mm-hmm. And that's another point that I'm really interested in is that like that balance of nostalgia there. So
Jean, what's one thing for you? And then we'll come back to you, Nicole. So we'll kind of keep ping-ponging back and forth.
Annie. Mm. Bro, I'm going to miss Annie.
She's she was so good.
So I said the one thing that that got me for so far in season two, I was like kind of skeptical watching, and it was that scene where she dies and he's got the baby.
Annie's baby.
Yeah.
The first episode, I'm watching and I'm like, fuck are these people?
We're completely outside the bunker, right? Xavier? Yeah.
What is going on?
Right.
Give me the people that I know and need, right? So I'm sitting there watching it and I'm just like, oh. And, you know, I'm getting drawn into these characters, these people, and how they're surviving and how they survived and what it means for their survival. I'm just going to say this really quickly. This is my second point about this season. I trust no one. I love a show where I immediately spider senses start tingling. And I don't trust anyone, right? When Link says, we're a bunch of nerds that just survived, I'm like, yeah, yeah, no, 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 no. Because I know a lot of nerds who are not kind people. I'm not going to. A lot.
Fair.
So
yeah.
I am, you know, I'm just like waiting for the other shoe to drop as to what Link has done in order to survive this post, you know, human world. So
it's probably being so handsome.
That too, right? That too, you know, but so yeah, that's where I'm at. So those two things, Annie, her story, her survival story, the whole Graceland thing. I'm not an Elvis person. I'm not a fan of Elvis, but just the hilarity that she survived in Graceland to me is worth, you know, the entire first two episodes. Just that alone, that she survived, she rode out the apocalypse at Graceland is just peak. And I really love that.
This is what I was saying. This goes back to the point I was making before about the fact that this show will take its time with a character. And that we spent the whole first episode without seeing anybody from season one. That really baffled me. Like, wow, this is a choice. This is a bold choice.
Bold, bold.
And it worked. The question is can they make it pay off? And I think they did.
Yeah.
Now, can I necessarily buy Sterling K. Brown with a baby pouch riding a horse into the apocalypse? I got some issues. I don't know about some safety things there. Like maybe the baby should have stayed at the farmhouse with the other people, but whatever. We can let it ride. Nicole, what's a number two item for you?
I talked about it briefly, so I'll be quick, but I like the set design of this season. And I especially when you think about the vibe in the bunker being like a callback to a simpler time, which is such a problematic statement. I keep thinking of it like whose version of simpler time is it?
Right.
And I think that when I was talking about like social ethics of like the architecture of these spaces, that like sociology piece comes up a lot in this show, like social status. And the inside the bunker, it's fishy. Like something, I don't know. It doesn't sit well with me. It seems obviously very fabricated, but it's meant to. And then we're mirroring that with a very strong reality in the outside world. And this Graceland piece, you know, just to go back to that point for a quick second, the thought that they named their daughter Presley and then he ends up at Graceland taking care of this baby. When Annie says, as she's bleeding and dying, like, it has to be you. It was always meant to be you. Like, that's a slow burn for me. That was like a long con, something that was intentionally put in for that payoff moment. And I think it really did work. The constructivist social ethics of the inside spaces are very intriguing to me. And I'm eager to see it all shatter.
And that they overtly use, I forget the character's name. Is it Gabriella, I think, who is a psychiatrist?
The therapist.
Yeah. That they psychologically profiled all the people that they were going to, you know, bring down into there.
It's engineered. It's an engineered environment.
Yeah.
Which is creepy at best. You know.
And what's interesting is when we go to the mailman and that community, that's an engineered community, right? Yes. And it's all, what's interesting, I was thinking about this, right? Nerds, we got a mailman, we got engineer, we've got all of the, they're doing something with the category of survival, the people that are surviving here. That they're not, I don't know what they're doing yet, but they're specifically pulling out a guy who is a librarian, but was an engineer, a guy who's a mailman, right? A guy who's another engineer, right?
There's a survivalist.
Right. And there's a whole bunch of that kind of person, people that you wouldn't necessarily think of being, you know, people who would survive a catastrophe like this.
Well, Enos lied about it. He's not an engineer. He was a cable guy. Spoiler.
Right. Okay. Oh, that was the spoiler for
that
the
That was the big spoiler for the second half of season five. Nothing else major happens. Yeah.
I'm just can't podcast with you anymore.
No, just that. And
to Nicole's point about the engineering, the social construct of the bunker, it's so weird because we know there is a vast underbelly. There is a literal underworld prison where people are working sight unseen, right? So the people who are living with the artificial sun never get to see the people who never see the artificial sun.
Right. Like, or the people that are making the sun,
right?
Like broadcasting the sun.
Just really, really an interesting dynamic.
So is this like a Snowpiercer metaphor thing? Like an allegory? Kind of. This is a giant sort of allegory for modern life right now?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think about it until you just said it, Nicole.
And it's like really.
Right, and we see that in Silo too. Nicole, were you watching Silo?
Yeah, I was into it.
Yeah, and I know Jean, you were into Silo.
Yeah,
for sure. So this is very interesting. It has Silo-y vibes, doesn't it? Mm. It's interesting to put the two shows in communication with each other to parallel them. So, and the other one, Fallout on Amazon Prime.
So different.
Oh God.
But it was underground
the vault,
bunker.
Yeah, and the vault is like, again, that like call back to nostalgia. What is it about being like captured, like in a bunker, and you have to be in a 1950s vibe?
Because it, on the surface, that it was harmonious and worked. But I think what we're not seeing is that people were on drugs and they were drinking and they were screwing each other blind and
it never worked.
It was never harmonious and it never worked.
No, it only worked for like a few people, and that's why it's like these are why we have the problems, guys.
Yeah. Exactly.
This is like why.
So these folks that are making these bunkers and these vaults, you know, it worked for them.
Dying. Yeah. Cool. Okay.
So there's one thing that I noted that I wanted to flag really quick. There seems to be some weird connection between Link and Xavier. They're both having the same flash or sort of dreamy vibe thing. Did you catch that?
I think so. I thought it was like this. I think there's some sort of like time thing going on, and I can't wait to really get into that to see if that's what is actually happening, because that is going to be so freaking awesome. I'm here for a time travel story. Give me time travels. I want it all, you know. Even if it's you got a multi-dimensional door way to somewhere else, give me that. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
Right.
But do you guys think it's time travel? Do you think the show's about time travel?
I'm thinking, pissed if it is. I'm thinking it is. Because
it's like a lover psychic connection.
I don't know. No.
Like in a kiss.
No.
But there's something though, right? They're hinting at something.
Because
is it like heated rivalry? Is it going to turn into heated rivalry?
It might. Sterling K. Brown and Link hooking up. I'm not mad about it, guys.
Yeah.
That whole scene.
Not going to turn it off.
And it's, you know, it's really, you know,
it's dreamy.
I'm thinking.
Did the EMP do something?
I think it's really interesting though, because they both felt it, and like I said, there's something bigger happening, and I can't believe that there's only like three episodes left. Like that doesn't make sense to me.
And then why would Annie say to him, "It has to be you"?
It has to be you.
Why does it have to be?
I think that baby's going to stick with those lesbians and that.
I think that's the move.
All right, so I haven't seen that part yet.
Okay, all right.
Sorry. No, you're fine.
Spoiler.
As long as there's some, I mean, that baby needs a home. She does not need to be riding around with.
His name's Annie's baby. Like, give her a name.
Is home.
Like, so cute.
Xavier is home.
Yeah, but like, you can't. I'm sorry.
I don't know. It'll all be sorted out.
Right. Right. They won't kill a baby, right? They won't.
No.
Oh, God. No.
That would be
David. Come on.
No, baby.
Oh, my gosh.
Baby. Jean, do you got any? What? Do you got a number two?
No, my number two was that I don't trust anyone. Right.
Right. Got it.
That was my number two.
You got a number three?
And my number three is it's time travel. I think it's time travel. I think it's time.
Is this Dark Arena? Have either of you seen Dark?
No.
No, I've always meant to watch it, and I just never have.
Because I hear it's the ultimate mystery box. Like, it's the mystery box that you want. That every mystery box show that you've ever seen, this is the one that does it right and solves the mystery for you.
Right.
And all you have to do is kick back and watch them twist the Rubik's Cube, and you don't even have to think or do anything. Everything reveals, but it is so compelling. The characters are so interesting. And once you've watched enough of Dark that your sort of synaptic pattern matching thing is working, and you're like, oh, this person and that person and this time frame and that time frame and this doorway and that doorway, it suddenly then like clicks in your mind. And then just then they wrap the whole story up basically in the few, you know, however many seasons it was.
You had me at, I don't have to think. That sounds great. I'm like, doing way too much thinking.
Yeah, so, do not think. That's the thing with Dark. Yeah, that is my biggest takeaway for Dark. Do not think, just watch.
I think all day, every day, and it's boring.
Nicole, do you have a final thought that you want to wrap up with?
I do. And I need to honor my Nevermind the Music roots and talk about the music on the show because it's so good. Right. Like I'm listening to Spotify soundtrack, like the Spotify playlist for the soundtrack, and it's so good. So I did some research for you guys because I know that you like that sort of thing. The team that does the music supervision for the show is Manish Raval and Tom Wolfe. They've worked together for about 25 years. They work a lot with Dan Fogelman, who's the creator of this show, Paradise. They've done a lot of other shows like Community, New Girl, which is like fine, but not really on brand here. But most notably for me, they did this music supervision for Donnie Darko, which I think that when you listen to that, Alex, like the cover of Mad World, that's heavily prominent in Donnie Darko. That's the very similar vibe to a lot of the music in Paradise. And it's really stripped down covers of really great classic rock songs that are like, the songs are part of the narrative of the episode. And then they do a needle drop for the credits. That's like a stripped down version of it.
I got a needle drop for you that I picked out already.
It's just so good. And for me, that's what first drew me in to think that there was more to the show than I first thought. Because like you, I watched two episodes and then kind of backed away. But once I started listening to the music, I was like, oh, this is very haunting and thoughtful and intentional. And that was very intriguing for me. So if nothing else, like just listening to that Spotify playlist is going to give you a good sense of what this show is. And there's a lot of great hip hop on there, lots of great singer-songwriter stuff. So really good soundtrack.
Nice.
Great team doing it. So that was my final thought.
Cool. Great. That's a really great shout out. And the composer, or I don't know what his actual title is. He is the guy who made the original music for the show. Mm-hmm. Siddhartha Khosla. Yeah.
Did a bunch of other stuff too.
Right. Super He's got a good. Really long filmography. And when you hear that haunting melody, that's him. That's his original composition. So very cool. All right, Jean, anything else you want to wrap up real quick or good?
Yeah, I'm super excited for the rest of this season. Gary, I knew it when I laid eyes on you. I knew it.
Suspicious.
As soon as I saw him, I was just like,
So you got a mailman and a project manager engineer guy who played two pivotal roles in the twisting and turning of this. Sort of two people you wouldn't think of as the obvious mustache twirling types.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting.
Oh, right? he is a mustache twirler for me as soon as I saw him.
Like and we're all like products of the environment we grew up in, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the past 3 years couldn't have been easy. So I'm giving Gary a little bit of grace, but I also think that you need to watch the second half of the episode.
I'm going to go right after this.
Okay.
His motivations are skewed.
Yes.
He's tricky, yes. Tricky.
Yeah, for real, for real. Okay, cool. Well, let's wrap up. Let's get out of here. Let's see how season two goes. And if it blows our funky minds, let's come back and we can do a little quick season.
I would love to do a wrap up. Yeah.
All right.
That would be
great. Nice. Perfect. Nicole, what's happening on Nevermind the Music?
Well, we're on our, like I said at the jump, we're on our spring breaks now. So me, Mark and I are recording like crazy, trying to
get ahead of content. Right, because you guys bank up all your content.
We batch content. So we just recorded a bunch of episodes yesterday, including the mailbag episode, the Jean's featured on. So we'll do another one. So send us in your stuff.
No, I needed to get it in for this one because it had to do with an episode.
That's okay. We're happy to honor it. We'll take late work here.
Okay, all right. God, I'm sorry. Because I got to get back at Mark for something. So
we have a great Shania Twain episode that just came out today that we're recording on Tuesday, March 10th. It just dropped this morning. Cool. We recorded an episode about The Killers when you were young yesterday. That was really cool. So we got a lot of stuff coming down the pipeline. Check us out. Email us at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Hit us up on Discord. I love to drink wine and yap on Discord. So that's what you're getting.
And we got to get you over on the pit before
Too long. Please. I'm stoked on that.
Let's do that. If there's an episode that comes up in this back half, ping me and then we'll pull you on one of the regulars. Otherwise, we can pull you in maybe for a season wrap or something. If you
that's cool. We'll figure it out. Way.
But if there's one that really grabs you that has like some topical stuff for you, because we've definitely had a lot of sociology, psychology things sort of in there. I mean, there's the whole thing with the young man in the library.
Oh, right? Yeah. And,
yeah.
Yeah. We'll and the cancer lady, the hospice cancer lady.
Yeah.
There's some definitely really interesting. There's so much. It's such a great show, but
so
it's a different day.
Jean, what do you and Alicia got cooking up? We've got some more movies and shows coming up.
So we're going to be doing next week. We're going to be recording 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple, finally. We'll be talking about that. And Daredevil's coming.
Alicia's been busy with her Oscar coverage episodes. We had to kick Bone Temple Oscar down
coverage,
a little bit.
All the Oscar coverage that she's been doing, which is amazing.
She's burning
and
it
then
down.
It's going to, you know, I guess culminate this weekend, And
Sunday.
Yeah, so we'll do The Bone Temple. Daredevil's coming right after.
Okay.
Are
you guys going to hook up with Luke on that one?
We're going to be with Luke on Daredevil and with Riley on Bone Temple. And so was with us when we did 28 Years Later over the summer.
Perfect. Perfect.
So yeah, good stuff and coming.
We got Lanterns coming up.
Oh God. Yes.
You excited for that?
It can be all the size. It can be. Yes. Oh my God. I can't. I'm at a loss for words here. This is.
All right.
It's really, you know, With Wonder Man, that the dynamic.
Dude, that's still my top.
It's the best show. It's the best show that I've watched so far this year.
Yeah.
So with Wonder Man and that dynamic duo, I'm hoping we get the same sort of. It may not be as good, but the same sort of dynamic duo.
Okay.
And Green Lantern. So yeah, I'm excited for that.
Sounds good. And then we're talking about some House of the Dragon coverage.
House of the Dragon might be. Yeah.
You might be stepping in.
I'm down.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, we're working it out because I'm going to be on vacation for part of that in June.
Okay.
And I know John has some feelings about the seasons, where we're at with it and stuff like that. So, but I know Anthony and Steve are covering it as well. So that's really going to be exciting as well. And if anybody is not caught up with Properly Howard, definitely get over there. And the thing about, I just want to asterisk with Properly Howard, for the movies that they're covering, don't listen it for the movie. Like, don't worry about having not seen the movie. Just listen it to hear these two guys talk because they're hilarious. They're just so much fun.
That is true.
That is true. And they got their new season kicking off and they just were talking about the Glenn Powell remake of Running Man.
Running Man.
And Steve has this hilarious Schwarzenegger impersonation. It's like perfect. So good. And then Radioactive Rambling just finished off their Fallout coverage. Speaking of Fallout, they just finally put out, their final episode over there. And I think that's about it. I mean, we've got still plenty of content coming out. So stick around, give us a rating, something like that. My mouth is broken because it's so late in the evening and it's been a long day. So, Nicole, speaking of fun needle drops in the show, this is the needle drop that I picked out for sort of our outro music here.
Podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.